The dark days are done, and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Thank you. That was Sarita singing Sonny and Frank Sinatra saying, "Here's Johnny, the nighty host of The Tonight Show," and booked me as his first guest. I'm live in Las Vegas, the world's largest gambling resort, pretending to be a city now that it has a great hockey team. As you know, Friday was Black Friday, where people were trampling each other to go shopping. Today is Cyber Monday, where more people are again trampling each other to do some more shopping. Tomorrow is Return Your Crap Day. And Wednesday is your file for bankruptcy day. I just returned from a wonderfully productive 12-day trip to Washington, D.C., where we had a standing room only screening of the American media and the second assassination of President John F. Kennedy at American University, where John Kennedy gave his greatest peace speech June 10th, 1963. We had standing room only at the press club with the McClendon Group, thanks to Andrew Craig of the Justice Integrity Organization. The three congresspersons who said they'd show up never did, but we did three radio shows, and then no American journalist wanted to interview us or look at the film. But TASS, Russia's leading news agency, spent 45 minutes with us. So if the Russians give me and the film a good review, it will finally be something truthful about Russia that you can blame them for. A couple of quick thoughts about D.C. The large metal fence around the White House, built years ago to protect the president from the people, has been enlarged to now protect the people from the president. The Washington, Jefferson, and Lincoln memorials, surprisingly, are still there. They were once a dream of what America could become. But what we have really become is turned them into stone relics, less interesting now and less inspiring than the pyramids. One of the busiest businesses in D.C., other than lawyers defending sexual predators, is Uber, not cabs. Every day I was there, I was in an Uber at least five times with 60 different drivers. There was not one whose first language was English. One driver in the tour from Ethiopia took me to see some new sites. That's, if you can call a museum new. The two new museums he showed me were absolutely ugly in Braille. The Native American Indian Museum should have been built by Native American Indians instead of Mexicans. Google it. It has less style than a teepee. It looks like a stack of quesadilla. And the Black Museum is even worse. Google that. It looks like four large brown slave barges stacked on one another. The architectural students who built it probably wanted it to look realistic. In that case, they should have engraved the names of the owners on them. With all the empty space around and the quickly growing multi-ethnic population, I asked the driver if the government had bought the land yet where they're going to build the Caucasian Museum. He laughed and said, "No, man, we build soon. Small museum, man." In 1981, when I asked Jim Garrison, the only law enforcement officer to investigate JFK's murder, how he felt he could ever take on the federal government, bring the truth to the public, how he believed he could do that, he said to me, "John, quote, I guess I thought I was living in the country I was born in," unquote. Jim Garrison obviously was not, and sadly, neither are we. So when I want to find out where America is today, I go to my guest site, a former professor of economics at a number of universities, associate editor of the Wall Street Journal, assistant secretary of the Treasury under President Reagan, a highly informed insider, now one of the country's and the world's most passionately informed outsiders, taking a week off from his site. But fortunately and thankfully, he is here with us tonight, the incomparable Paul Greig Roberts. Paul, thank you so much and welcome to the show.
Well, John, that was a hell of an introduction. Thank you very much.
Well, sir, I must tell you, you deserved it, and you deserve all kinds of accolades. But there's one question I've always wanted to ask you, and I asked nearly all of my guests, because those people of whom I am really proud and I'm really interested in and really aspire to be like, I always wonder how they got to be the people they got to be. When you were, let's say you were, when you were a teenager, a young man, a student, what were your parents like? What were your siblings like, if you had any? What is it that you wanted to do as a youngster? And as you look back, could you ever imagine that your life would have taken the trajectory it did?
No, I wouldn't have. And, of course, none of us had any idea what we wanted to do. But we were all raised with the view you had to look yourself in the mirror. And in those days, it meant that you had to be decent and honest and fair. Of course, today, it means you've got to have ripped somebody off. If you haven't ripped somebody off, you can't look yourself in the mirror. But in my day, it was the opposite. You had to have behaved according to the scriptures and done everything that a just and decent person would do, and you could look yourself in the mirror. If you didn't, you were shamed, and you were ashamed of yourself. And that's the way we grew up. And that's all gone. It's not there anymore. So that's the biggest difference, John. Over the course of one life, I've watched the collapse of the character of people.
When you were a youngster, Paul, did you recall what you really thought you wanted to be? Let's say you were a teenager or you were in school. What did you major in school? Yeah, I mean, you went to like four different universities, for crying out loud, and you studied under Nobel Prize winners. What was it you thought you were going to do with all that knowledge when you graduated?
Really, we had no idea.
What was your first job?
In my day, John, there were so many opportunities. Anybody went to college with anything, had a good job. And
well, you know, that is so true. You know, I came down to the United States when I was 15 or 16 years of age. I ran away from a dysfunctional home in Canada. But I could get five or six different jobs every day, and often I had to do that. And in those days, as you well remember, a man could work at one company and have one job and have a wife and two or three kids and have a home and put his kids through college. Now, every family I know, the husband and the wife not only have one job, they often have two jobs. How did that happen?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. No mother, unless she was single, a single woman, worked. All mothers were in the home. They took care of the home. They raised the kids. They provided meals and whatever it took to provide a home. And the husband worked in the job and came home. And that's the way I grew up. Now, that's gone. I mean, that's impossible for everybody except the top 3 or 4%, maybe the top 5%. So the middle class existence that I grew up in no longer exists. It's not possible. And yet they say we have progressed, that the economy has grown, that people have a better living standard. Well, it's simply not true. Today, you come home, there's no home-cooked meals. The mom sticks some kind of prepared food in the microwave, if she even does that. because she's worn out. She's worked all day. She's had a long commute. So is Dad. So everything that I have experienced in my life has been a decline. I have seen no progress in anything. Certainly not in medicine. I mean, antibiotics, they don't work anymore. They've been so abused. When I was a kid, an antibiotic knocked out whatever you had instantly. Now they have more and more and more, and stronger and stronger and stronger, and they endanger your life, and they still can't stop superbug. So my whole life has been one of experiencing universal decline of the United States in every aspect: political integrity, justice, fairness, medicine, whatever.
Paul, did you sense any of that? First of all, I would like to know what the first important job was that you thought you had when you got out of college, because President Reagan would have not picked you to be Assistant Secretary of the Treasury unless you had great credentials. So first tell me about that. And then when you got that job inside the government, the very bowels of the government, did you sense that there was going to be a decline in the country then, or in that position with President Reagan there, did you feel something more positive might happen with the country?
With Reagan, I felt everything positive was going to happen because he was he had two goals, John. He was committed to solving the stagflation problem. When Reagan was elected, because of the post-war macroeconomic policy, we had a situation where inflation and unemployment were both rising simultaneously. So the old policy, which had used inflation to overcome unemployment and to use unemployment to overcome inflation, had broken down. You had both rising. It was called stagflation. Nobody knew what to do, and the reason I got the job was I had a solution. That's why Reagan put me in there, and it worked. So he wanted to stop the stagflation. And then, once he cured the American economic problem, he wanted to bring the pressure of an arms race on the Russians, or the Soviets at the time. They were the Soviets. To force them to negotiate an end of the Cold War. He didn't really mean with the arms race to attack them or do anything. And most of the so-called arms race was just talk. There was never any Star Wars. It was just talk. But the notion he had was, hey, we fixed our economy. They can't fix theirs. So we're threatening them with an arms race, and they'll have to then say, hey, we don't want to do this. We'll negotiate the end of the Cold War. That's really what Reagan wanted to achieve. And he was able to do that with Gorbachev, and they negotiated the end of the Cold War. So the whole thing was all over. Now, this really pissed off the military security complex, which Eisenhower had warned us about in 1960-61 in his last public address. They needed an enemy because they had and have a massive budget financed by the taxpayers. Today, it's $1 trillion. That's $1,000 billion a year. They waste in the pretext that they've got an enemy. So when the Soviet Union collapsed, they didn't have an enemy for 20 years, so they tried to create one out of the Muslim threat, the terrorist threat. It's just not a big enough enemy. These people, they don't have navies, they don't have air forces, they don't have armies. So they've gone back under Obama to Russia. Now Russia is the great threat. It intervenes in our elections, it does this, it does that, blah, blah, blah. And they're brainwashing the American public, which is accustomed to the Soviet threat. So it's not something new to them. Oh, it's just the same old thing here. It's the Russians. Same people, same threat. In order to keep a justification for wasting $1,000 billion a year on military crap when people don't have health care, There's no infrastructure improvement. Education is collapsing. You see what I mean? It's all a facade. They use fear to benefit a tiny percent of the corporate sector that feeds back into the politicians the profits they make in campaign contributions. So well, we have a situation where the Congress is owned by three or four powerful interest groups who get a lot of federal money and recycle it back into the election campaigns of the people who support them and their federal grants of monies. That's the way the United States works today.
Paul, you sound exactly like Jim Garrison in my documentary about the American media and the second assassination of President John Kennedy. I mean, it's also unbelievable what you're saying and how smart these people are. The Boeing airplane is a long outmoded airplane, and yet they've arranged to have parts for that airplane manufactured in 50 different states. So if some congressperson said, hey, we're spending two or three times the amount of money right now on the military that we did during the Second World War, we've got to change some of this, he would be voted out of office because there'd be thousands of his constituents out of work. The other thing is, we have become so militarized. You know, the NFL, the National Football League, is supposed to be a nonprofit charity organization, and the Pentagon pays them millions of dollars a year to march soldiers and the flags out on the field. Paul, it looks more and more every day at every sporting event. It looks like Nuremberg, for crying out loud, which Garrison said in the 60s. Now, when you left, before you left your job with President Reagan, did you begin to sense the threat of what the military was doing there? You have a wonderful article now, out now on your site. I think it's called Can America Survive Washington? Tell us about that article.
Well, that article is about the military-industrial complex's need for an enemy. It's about the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton's need for an explanation for their loss to Trump. And it's about the neoconservatives' ideology of American supremacy over the world. So all of that, of course, is frustrated by the rise of Russia and China. So what we see is that a frustrated Washington keeps demonizing Russia, a very powerful military entity that can wipe us off the face of the earth in a few moments' notice, without notice. And they keep pressing these people and making false accusations and putting military bases on their border. And the other day, the Prime Minister of Great Britain declared Russia to be a hostile power. And we're now organizing six former provinces of the Soviet Union as to be part of NATO against Russia. So we keep putting these pressures and threats.
Do you see a dichotomy in Washington? I mean, it's obvious that what you're saying is absolutely true. But when I say, do you see a dichotomy? I just don't get the feeling that President Trump feels exactly the same way about Russia, because when he met with Putin, he looked like he really enjoyed meeting that man.
Yeah, no, you're right, John. He doesn't. But you see, the president today, Reagan was the last president we had. We haven't had a president since then. Reagan was an old man. He was immensely popular. He had a strong movement behind him. He was able to get some of his own people into his government. He was too old to believe that the president wasn't the boss. But ever since, we've had these fake presidents selected because of their weakness, because of their their vulnerabilities, either real or manufactured. In the case of Trump, you know, they've accused him of being a Putin agent, a Russian conspirator. All this is made up. There's never been, we've heard about it now for over a year, there's never been a scrap of evidence presented. So they've learned how to make the president vulnerable, and so he collapses because he can't do anything about it. I mean, the last president who resisted them was John F. Kennedy, and they killed him. So we have a situation where the president is really just a creature of the deep state and the powerful private interest groups, or private public in the case of the military security complex. You know, who rules America? Wall Street, the big banks, the banks too big to fail, the military security complex, the Israel.
Yeah, Chris Hedges calls America corporatocracy, and nearly every one of the political scientists in every one of our major universities says we now live in an oligarchy, that democracy does no longer exist. But, you know, when you look at the media coverage of Donald Trump, you almost get the feeling that they feel the election is not over.
And right. What, right. No, they're what trying to overturn him. Well, the DNC, the Democrat National Committee, wants to overturn him. The military security complex just wants to make him impotent so he cannot normalize relations with Russia, because if he normalizes relations with Russia, the enemy disappears. It's no longer a justification for a $1 trillion annual budget.
So, well, you know, the really strange and bizarre thing about this is to listen to you recite these facts, which everyone is aware of, makes one feel rather hopeless about the future of America. But when we hear your voice and read your writings and hear the voices of others who think and write like you, though not quite as well, you begin to feel a sense of hope. But I must tell you, I often have the feeling we may be seeing Donald Trump as the last so-called elected president of the United States.
Well, I think what they're trying to do is to make it clear to any future candidate that if you run based on appeals to the people's interest, such as I'm going to bring the offshore jobs home, I'm going to stop this trouble with Russia, which wastes all this money, we could have other things, a renewed infrastructure, a national health system, they're trying to make it clear to future candidates, if you do that, we're going to do to you what we've done to Trump. And you won't be independently a multi-billionaire. You won't be such a tough, strong guy. If we can break him and make him obey us, we can make mincemeat of you. I think that's what the message is. That's what they're doing. They're trying to show that a strong personality worth several billion dollars, he still hasn't the, and you give him the office of the president, he still can't stand up to the oligarchy. That's what the media is teaching everybody every day, 24/7, all the prostitutes, the whores at the Wall Street, at the New York Times, at the Washington Post, at CNN, at MSNBC. These people are all teaching Americans and all future political candidates, if you want to be a success, you have to follow the line of the oligarchy. That's what this is. That's what they're using Trump to do. And what really disturbs me is that the liberal progressive left is supporting all of this. They should be up just raising hell that the interest groups are destroying a president who was elected by the working class. Instead,
Paul, you
want
to know
something? Working class, those people are the Trump deplorables. They're white, sexist, racist, homophobic males.
Yes. And to me, though, the left, there is no left left in America.
That, you're all. Right. I've said that many times. There's no left left, but there's a pretend left. And it's allied with the oligarchy to get rid of Trump because they don't like his rhetoric.
To me, the two most disappointing politicians in America in the last 10 years, to me, have been Ron Paul and Bernie Sanders, which is the pretend left. Ron Paul was the only one who brought up the business about, we got to take another look at the Federal Reserve, which is a private bank, okay? Now, he is the only candidate I ever put a bumper sticker on my car. I had to take off the fender to get it off after he decided he wasn't going to run as a 30-party candidate. And then when Bernie threw his hat in the ring, I said, that man's going to turn out to be the Democrats. Ron Paul, the reason they are so disappointing is because they raise your hope and then they desert you. Now, as you know, they're claiming the Russians helped rig the election. But it was Bernie files in the Democratic National Party who were the ones who gave these files to Julian Assange. And the only truthful thing I've ever heard any anchorman say on NBC in the last 10 years, he said Julian Assange has never released any files that weren't truthful. The Russians, as you've just said, had nothing to do with our election. So if you were president, what is the one thing that you think you could do that could help restore the America that you knew as a younger man and that you knew as a younger man and wanted to be a citizen of this great country because I saw too many Frank Capra movies? What is it you would do?
Well, you know, John, you couldn't do anything. They'd kill you. You know, there were a few Roman emperors in the declining years that tried to put things back together. They were all killed because it was contrary to the short-run interest of some group, either the Praetorian Guards or some general in the field. Or, you know, I think when it's lost, it's lost. And then, there was a real revolution, something like the French Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, where the entirety of the ruling class is hung off of lampposts.
Well, you know,
nothing can be done.
You probably saw these news reports. Here in Las Vegas, there was a church that had 2,000 turkeys to feed the homeless in this town. 7,000 people turned up. That meant 5,000 could not be fed. The same thing happened in churches in Los Angeles. So there is going to be a mass movement somehow soon, which the government obviously is preparing for. But you know what? If I could do one thing, Jim Garrison pointed out that when John Kennedy was killed, a company could only own 5 radio stations or television stations in 1963, meaning 1,500 different people owned those means of communication. So we had 1,500 different voices. The worst president in American history, Bill Clinton, signed the Communications Act. And now 95% of all our media, as you know, is in the hands of 6 corporations, which are propagandists for the imperialist empire that we continue to build. I would think if some senator or congress people could say we must rescind the Communications Act and put communication back in the hands of the public, maybe we could hear different voices. I don't think there'll ever be another Jim Garrison or Martin Luther King or John Kennedy, as you say. They just won't allow them to rise. And I am so impressed by the fact that you so honestly say they would actually kill them. And that's what they do, as Jim Garrison said, they're in the killing business. But
that's
you are still an unbelievable inspiration by what it is you continue to do and write. So I would like you to tell the folks where they can go to read your wonderful stuff.
Well, my site's just my name. It's just www.paulcraigroberts.org. O-R-G. It's not .com because my webmaster screwed up and let .com loose, and some Arab or Muslim or somebody has paulcraigroberts.com and is still telling what's on it, but it has nothing to do with me.
And well,
I am .org, and that's my website, and you'll see my picture there. And
a great picture it is there, up there with a couple of articles and thing. I have it on my Facebook page, and everybody absolutely loved it. I know you took a week off for your Thanksgiving. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
Took the week off because there's a construction site not far from here, and some idiot driving a forklift with the forklift raised drove across the power lines. And the power lines became more and more taut, and they snapped the telephone pole that served my property, and all the power went out. And the power company came, and they no longer have their own crews because they don't want to have to pay anybody or give any benefits, so they hire these contractors who don't work for the power company, and they came in, they hooked up the power, but the morons didn't check to see if the neutral line was connected, and it wasn't. So they shut my house for 2 weeks, nobody here, nobody knew, full 240 volts, 24/7. They burned out every appliance in the house, all the breaker boxes. They blew out the military surge protection. They destroyed all the garage door openers, the sprinklers. They destroyed everything. I'm surprised they didn't burn the house down. So here we have America.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
This is America today.
I'm so sorry to be laughing at your misfortune. But I'll tell you.
It's taken me a month.
In the past,
my house is still not back together. Only the upstairs functions. The downstairs still doesn't function.
Well, in the past, I always used to look for excellence in any company or person that I would hire. Now I'm thrilled just with the competence. I am so sorry. The CIA will do anything to shut Paul Craig Roberts up.
No, it had nothing to do with them. This is just the incompetence of the way capitalism works. People no longer have competent people working for them. They hire outside contractors because they don't have to pay medical care. They don't have to pay workman's comp. They don't have to pay pensions. So it's all greed, the bottom line. So no one gets any service. And these independent contractors, they're not working for the power company. They don't care if they blow your house up. It's not them.
Well,
it's not the power company. We're rushing off to do something else. So, in fact, out in my yard by the street, the top of the telephone pole is still hanging in the trees, and the splintered pole is still standing there.
Oh, gosh. I'm so sorry.
It's been like this for over a month.
Are you staying in a hotel? Are you staying
in a
hotel?
Yeah, over a month. And we are a superpower. We are the world's exceptional people. We are the indispensable country. This is worse than Third World India 100 years ago.
Well, Paul, thank you so, so much for coming on this show at this time of your crisis. And again, people can find you at www.paulcraigroberts.org. Thank you so, so much for being here. I have your email address, and I will send you a copy of the film, and I would love to talk to you about it after you take a look at it. Again, Paul, thank you so much, and have...
Well, thank you, John, for sharing your audience. I appreciate it. Thank you very much, and good night.
Okay, and again, good luck, and I will talk to you again after the first of the year.
Look forward to it.
Okay, thank you, sir. Bye-bye. We'll be right back with the one and only Joe Satilli to expand upon America's growing incompetence. We'll be right back.
Great news. music from all the greatest performers from sunup to sundown.
How do you keep the music playing?
At last.
Well, beyond the sea.
Then, great talk all night. The mysteries of UFOs. Conspiracy theories and the true story of Las Vegas that has never been told.
There are three ways to listen to KIYQ. Go to the TuneIn app, just search for KIYQ, or go to www.kiyq.org. Listen from any telephone, call 605-477-2857. That's 605-477-2857. Long distance charges may apply.
KIYQ 107.1.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Thank you for that smile upon your face, oh sunny.
Hi, this is John Barber. You may remember me as the co-host, producer, and creator of Real People, America's first reality show. Or most recently as the writer-director of what's been called the definitive documentary on JFK's murder, The Last Word on the Assassination. Now I'm doing a show every other Monday from 5 to 6 Pacific Time on BBS. You'll hear provocative views, unreported news, and film reviews from me, with outstanding guests and you. Join me on John Barber's World.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Those of you who have an ongoing interest in the JFK assassination might want to know about this. TV producer John Barber. He put together a dream team of JFK researchers, including Coast regular Jim Mars and world-class JFK writers Dick Russell and Joan Mellon. They all got together at UNLV in front of a live audience. They had a screening of Barber's terrific, and I'd say historic, film based on interviews with prosecutor Jim Garrison of New Orleans. And then after the film was shown, the experts all talked about the latest JFK theories and evidence. It's now out on a DVD. Terrific stuff. I'm George Knack, Coast to Coast AM.
Welcome back to John Barber's World Live here in Las Vegas, known by some folks as Dealey Plaza with slot machines. Anyway, I did not get a chance to really celebrate Thanksgiving because I was in the air, had a two-hour layover in Denver, and so my Thanksgiving meal was McDonald's new Fukushima fish sandwich. Which tasted like rubber. And so anyway, I'm so delighted that Paul Craig Roberts could talk to us in spite of his disaster in Florida, which is a panhandle where his home is. And thrilled again to be talking to Joe Satilli, who by far is, I think there are two great writer reporters in America. They're Joe Satilli and Wayne Madsen. Thankfully, I'm fans of both of them, and I get to have Joe on my show all the time. And Joe, so tell me what you're thankful for.
Well, you know, it's odd to say this because I don't think many people said this out in public on Thanksgiving, but I have to tell you, I'm thankful for Donald Trump. And in particular, I mean, there are many things I'm thankful for, but today is a good example. His flatulent use of the office of the presidency is not just endlessly entertaining, but in some ways I think Donald Trump is exposing things about America, America as it is, America as it has been, America's history, that have been swept under the rug or flushed down the memory hole or have been lost to people who were never exposed to it, or if they were exposed to it tangentially, they've long forgotten it. Today he had American Indian code talkers to have a ceremony and whatnot. And under a portrait of Andrew Jackson, the president who signed the Indian Removal Act, he's he's talking to these code talkers and then goes on a little rant about Elizabeth Warren calling her Pocahontas. So whether or not she deserves to be called out for putting, you know, I'm part Native American on a college application way back when, I think that that's a valid thing to bring up. So that doesn't bother me. I don't, you know, I'm not here to stick up for her. But to use it as sort of a racial slur in front of these brave soldiers who fought for the United States in spite of the fact that, you know, American Indians were so mistreated, you know, as mistreated in many ways as African Americans were. I mean, they're two different things. One's slavery and one is actually a de facto genocide.
Joe, tell the audience who the code talkers were.
Well, John, you should do that because you're one of the people who brought them to prominence through Real People, weren't you?
Yes, exactly. And one of the interesting lines of narration that I said or that I wrote when I did the piece about the code talkers is the Japanese had broken every one of American's codes. And a fellow, a minister who was employed by the government remembered that when he was on the Indian reservation that Navajo was never a written language. So they recruited about 100 of the code talkers. They gave them the secret codes. They went behind the enemy lines in the Pacific and helped America shorten that war before we unjustifiably dropped the bomb on them. But they would never acknowledge after the war the code talkers existed, because they thought they were going to have another war with Russia and China and they would need them. But the sons and nephews of the code talkers, so proud of their lineage, they joined the Marines. And when they graduated in San Diego, went down and did a story about them. Ronald Reagan was the only celebrity we ever allowed on Real People. And the reason we allowed him on is because he came on to give a presidential long delayed Medal of Honor to the code talkers. So, and Real People, as you know, did this kind of thing more often than 60 Minutes. Just one quick thing about Donald Trump. A lot of people are sort of taking credit in the alternative news area, saying that the underground alternative news like Facebook and all of these things were the things that got Trump elected. That is not true. What got Trump elected, as you have pointed out often, is his appearance on mainstream media, because he got great ratings. And the people who put him on thought that this idiot would so turn off Americans that Hillary would be a slam dunk. And they kept talking about the fact that Hillary was doing great. It was like when they published the headline about Dewey Truman. Yeah. Okay. So it was the mainstream media's blunder that got this blunder elected president. It's like a Peter Sellers movie.
Or, John, it wasn't a blunder because, as you know, I've written about this extensively, and you start doing the totals, the mainstream media, particularly the three cable outlets, made huge profits off of putting Donald Trump front and center during the election campaign. And the mainstream media and the newspapers have had a renaissance featuring nonstop Donald Trump since he's been elected. He is great for business. He's great for business. And this is brings me back to more reasons why I'm thankful for Donald Trump, because I think that we're actually we're in this almost, how can I put it? It's the lancing of a boil. I'll give you another example. Donald Trump, right? He positioned himself as, I'm an anti-interventionist. We've had all these wars overseas. Well, if you actually started to listen to him, he talked about bombing the feces out of people and, you know, how he wants a huge military. And that's what he wanted, a gigantic military. His desire for a denouement with Russia notwithstanding, whether or not he was going to make nice with Putin, he says we need to have a huge military. Our military is depleted. A military budget of $618 billion, the last budget that of the Obama administration, he has now increased it to $700 billion. The amount of money of the increase, $80 billion from last year to this year, is almost twice as large. Well, it's not twice as large. It's close. it's way larger, let's put it that way, than the entire defense budget of Russia, which is about $60 billion. So the increase from 1 year to the next is $80 billion. That's just the increase from 620 to 700. Russia's entire budget, under $60 billion, really. So this is another area in which Donald Trump exposes the extent to which the entire economy is underpinned. There's like an economic floor by taking the defense budget, cycling it through defense contractors, and then as basically sort of a money laundering scheme where they take their cut and then it goes and it employs people all around the country. Another thing, you know, Donald Trump said he was going to drain the swamp. Well, look at Mick Mulvaney. This is the guy who's competing with the new appointee for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And who is Mick Mulvaney? He's a guy who thinks that the Consumer Protection Financial Protection Bureau should not exist. He has taken many tens of thousands of dollars from the banking industry, and the guy who wrote the memo that became the predicate for Mulvaney taking over in place of the appointee as head of this CFPB is a guy who worked for the payday loan industry. And the payday loan industry was one of the primary reasons why the CFPB was created in the first place, to try and stop them from defrauding and manipulating people who don't have access to banks.
Did you read today that Time magazine may make Robert Mueller the man of the year?
I wish I could be man of the year without saying a word to the press. I'm a contender now. I don't see how you can't have the Weinstein effect be person of the year.
Oh my gosh, how interesting is
think about it. Yes. You've been in the media business, the entertainment business for years. Think of what a radical change this really is. And how particularly the folks in the media, the Charlie Roses and the Weinsteins and these guys, they're dropped like a bad habit. And I think that's the first wave of it. Obviously, in politics, there's delay and just put me under investigation or deny and all that. But I think this is a radical change in the way our culture operates. And hopefully soon it will bleed down to the working class women who you know are being harassed at Denny's and supermarkets by.
I wonder about David Letterman, if he would still be on the air if he did what he did a number of years ago. You know, when I was in there in Washington on Monday, the Lincoln Center gave the Mark Twain Humor Award to David Letterman, which shows you just how unbelievably mediocre our society and our culture have become. Because I must tell you honestly, I don't remember Mark Twain ever apologizing to the American public for taking sexual advantage of one of his female employees or associates, which David Letterman did on national television. He had because she was threatening him with blackmailing him, and so wouldn't come out. He apologized and admitted it, and he kept his job. Also, I don't remember him ever writing a very funny book like Huckleberry Finn. And truthfully, I don't remember one funny line he ever uttered in his entire life, not written by a staff of 8 comedy writers. And I never remember one meaningful interview. And on the Jack Parr show, there was one meaningful interview every night for 5 years. But he does deserve an award for keeping a job that long, for being so mediocre. And, you know, it's the closing of the movie Amadeus, which is a great movie. And the guy's running around the Knot House, the guy that stole Mozart's music all the time. And he said, it's a triumph of mediocrity. The world is being run by the mediocres. And that's how the film ends. And that's what America has become. It just has become. Anyway, my feeling is that Donald Trump will not run again because he just knows he is not the boss. As Jim Garrison says in 1981 in our movie, he said the president does not run the country. And that was back then. He said, Garrison said, I thought the president didn't until they shot John Kennedy, but they don't. And of course, to hear a guy like Paul Craig Roberts, who was up there in the White House, and he's with the president, and the president is using this man's economic policies to try to solve America's economic problems and succeeds at the time, to have him say those shocking things that he says about it. Anyway, Joe, thank you so much. I can't wait for the article that you're beginning to write about the military. Please let me know so that we can talk about it once it's published.
Yeah, in 2 weeks we'll have it'll be up and we'll be able to cover it.
Okay, folks, you go and get Joe Satilli's News Vandal. It is by far the best newsletter you will ever read. And Paul Craig Roberts talked about revolution. The last photograph in our documentary is John Kennedy. And John Kennedy said, those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. And believe me, I have a sense that it's coming. But in spite of that, as Ed Murrow used to say, good night and good luck.
You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. A sunny, 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 I love.